Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are taking shooting ourselves in the foot to whole new levels in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, we conjured up a new way of throwing away all 3 points against Everton on Saturday. It was all going so well when Pascal Gross popped up with his first goal since returning, but Everton's controversial 97th-minute equaliser gave them a share of the spoils. The feeling at the Amex after that was distinctly mixed, and we will have to do better when you-know-who visit on Sunday. Also this week, there was more confusion than encouragement as the transfer window shut. Diego Coppola, Brian Gruder and Tommy Watson all went out on loan. Joe Knight has gone permanently. Andy Moran's gone permanently. And Kalen Vickers gone on loan. No new players have come in, but Matt O'Reilly has returned from Marseille, as has Iga from West Ham. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and helping us make sense of it all, Andy Bass, can you please make sense of it all?
I'll do my best.
Yeah, I thought, well, we normally have a nice, we shall tip our chapeau to it, Mr. Bass.
Yes, indeed.
But, it's been a bit of a weird landscape this week, isn't it?
Why?
Yeah. I just think it is weird. Obviously we've got the dark clouds approaching for Sunday, and I just like a very frustrating couple of weeks to look back on, where the results have underperformed the performances, certainly it did on Saturday. I wasn't at Fulham, so I can't really judge that, but I understand that, we were quite comfortable before we contrived to throw it away. And again, like, there's just been like this, we've been on a very characteristic Brighton Hove Albion dry spell, and I think, and like there's discontent amongst sections of the support, just as there has been when we've had other dry runs. Graham Potter had a massive one, and like other managers have all experienced this thing. For me, this dry spell seems a little bit different because I think we've been very unfortunate in terms of some avoidable, decisions by the officials which should have been made correct by VAR but actually weren't, and also just like good performances being undone by fairly basic errors on the pitch which needn't have happened. So I don't actually think we're playing that badly. But
well, the headline
we're
there
not
is
getting results.
The headline there is, I mean, everyone's the metric that everyone's banding about is the one win and 11 stat. But if you look at that, there's an awful lot of draws in that run as well.
Must only be about two or three defeats in that, isn't there? If that,
well, there was Fulham. The cup win at Man United was isn't included in that as well.
Okay, so you're talking league games only, yeah.
Yeah, so if we go back, obviously draw with Everton, lost at Fulham, drew with Bournemouth, drew with City, beat Burnley, drew with West Ham, lost at Arsenal, drew with Sunderland, lost at Liverpool, drew with West Ham, and
you're saying one
lost
win
to Villa.
11. I mean, it depends on how you want to put it. And if you've got an agenda to say that you just want to be a misery and want to say that, yeah, one win in 11 doesn't sound great, but we've got one defeat in five two in that 11. So, it's at the end of the day, those kind of metrics, yeah, they add up to, the final season position. It's not as though we're completely out of it. And I suppose that, the run that we're on. And I just think that sometimes there's that kind of antiquated thinking that some have, that one, a manager is only, and I mean only, judged by results, and that the manager is the only person to blame for that poor run. Which thankfully Tony Bloom and Paul Barber are a lot more enlightened than that when it comes to considering how it is that things are going and the direction of the club. I mean, let's put it this way, as Andy alluded to just a minute ago, there was a time where Graham Potter lost six games in a row, and then we went on a run where we beat Arsenal.
Yeah.
Well, we beat Manchester United in thrashing, right? And ahead of tomorrow night, AD, and for
Yes.
those going to Seagulls over London, they'll know what I mean. The 4-0 win over Manchester United is actually one of my favourite, if not my favourite, but one of my favourite moments from the Amex era, because it represented such a turnaround, and yet came from nowhere, where we hadn't won for at home for a year or something like that. But you could see that the performances were getting better, the results weren't. Now, you could argue, well, okay, well, previously we've been mediocre performances and good results, but you know what? That's football, and if you can't cope with it, you're following the wrong sport.
Yeah,
I
I mean, the
also,
thing is, I mean,
go on,
Andy, I
Andy.
mean,
Sorry, AD, go on, Andy.
yeah, I also think it's a bit weird because we have a relatively unbalanced squad. I'm sure we're going to come on to that in the transfer window because we haven't really done a great deal. But it just feels that we're not playing with a full deck. And like this season hasn't gone. This season hasn't gone how we A hoped and B probably expected. I think I would count myself as someone who would say that on both counts. I thought we would be doing better, but there have been just like little things that have been getting in the way of that. And
And the latest one is the officials.
the latest one is the officials,
Three games
but
in a row.
you can't control that. You know, we can control other things. It all just feels like this season. I'm not saying it's a lost season at all, but I do think we have enough pieces. We have a lot of pieces in place that I think will be much better next season. And I just think this is kind of like a learning on the job season for some players. I still think it's a learning on the job season for Hertzler. I think this is only his second top flight season. And I think he's done well.
Yeah. Great,
Others
greater
may
minds.
have a different opinion.
Well, greater
I mean,
minds than ours actually say that. I
yeah.
mean, David Moyes was very, very charitable about him. He said he thinks he's doing an amazing job. He thinks he'll coach Germany one day. I mean, you can't get much higher praise than that. I mean, I think everything is about context and perspective. And let's face it, Moyes has been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt, got the sack, and everything like that.
Yeah.
He knows what it takes to be a top level manager, and sees potential in Hertzler. All we want, let's face it, as Brighton fans, and we're horribly prejudiced because we're Brighton fans. The same would be for Everton fans who want glory because they've had past glories, is, you know, it's not about knowing your place, it's the perspective of it will fall in place. Is he doing a bad job? Well, that's almost a sort of a leading question. Or is he doing a good job? That's a leading question. Moyes thinks he's doing a fantastic job. And when it comes to talking about your contemporaries, then those are the people who you probably should listen to. I always remember Eric Cantona saying, for all the awards and accolades he got, the best ones he felt he got were those from his contemporaries.
Yeah. But I mean, football is all about narratives. Everyone's looking for a story to tell. And the narrative we're telling today could have been very, very different. If, you know, it's just 1 second in time, 97th minute of a game we should have won, we didn't win. And all of a sudden, the whole mood changes. The whole narrative changes. All of a sudden, it's doom and gloom, and everyone's going, Hertzler, you're not worth, get out of my club, but all around us. And it was like,
Was
you
it
know,
really that bad after the game?
It was really that bad, yeah. And but you know, if we'd have just managed to hold on, if we'd have actually done what we should have done and kept the ball at the other end of the pitch, and this is my concern, and it's partly down to the manager, it's mostly down to the players, but you know, it's game management.
Why would you say it's down in any way down to the manager here?
Well, basically, because he should be coaching he's the one that's coaching the players. The players are the ones that are out on the pitch. They're the ones that are taking the
Players
instructions.
know exactly.
The manager's not saying to the players, "Oh, by the way, go and throw away the lead in the last minute." He's not telling them to do that. But game management is something you can coach.
The players know exactly what they needed to do. They know exactly. They don't need their manager breathing down their neck 97 minutes a game. They know exactly what to do. They know how to do it. Because let's face it, as much as we've been complaining about this, you know, where we've thrown away leads in the last minute, I think thrown it. I mean, do you know, the number of times we've done that to other teams way outweighs what's happened to us. But again, that's the nature of football. Any decent professional team will keep going. And sometimes there is not a great deal you can do about it. However, yes, we could have defended a lot better. Yes, the ball could have been up the other end and someone chased it down and so on and so forth. Hertzler doesn't, no manager needs to tell their team that.
Yeah, I agree. That's it was all on the players.
All on the
But
players.
as we were moved into the like the you know, the injury time period, there's one small passage of Keystone Kop play where we just kept kicking it into the back of the nearest available Albion player, and amazingly, we didn't actually give away a goal. I thought we were going to give away a goal in that moment, and that we got away with that. I thought, oh, flipping it, we got away with it. I think we'll be all right now. And then you know, the players have got to do better in that situation. Just a calm head, and. There was even when like you know, I mean, for me, the goal should not have stood anyway, because
Come to that in a minute,
yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure we'll discuss that later. But that notwithstanding, you know, there was opportunities to clear the ball, dunk, you know.
Duncan Cadioglu got under each other's feet, didn't
Well,
they?
Dunk headed it along too. Like I can't remember which Everton player made the initial shot. In the Verbruggen save, but he sort of a bit, you know, by heading it across the goal like that, it went straight to the guy that ultimately created the opportunity for them to score. When it maybe could have headed it straight back out. All these sort of micro decisions, you know, allowing was it Garner to get the cross in the first place? He was in ages of space.
If you've got the ball, they can't score.
Yeah,
Well,
so.
this is it. I mean, I'm just thinking of a particular moment on 94 minutes. I think the ball had got cleared. Minte was chasing the ball down and did a brilliant job. And I think in the end, managed to win the throw-in pretty much on the halfway line. You think, okay, great. There are no reasons for us to do this now. If we'd have been under the cosh for the whole 6 minutes, and you think, okay, you know, let's see if we can see this out. And then Sod's Law says that we're going to concede just because. But they were hardly at us. They were probably at us for the sixth of the 6 minutes. Apart from that, we were managing very, very well. And like I say,
Yeah.
that particular thing where Mente's managed to take it halfway up the field, you think, well, it's not exactly job done because you can't let anything slack until the final whistle goes. But like you say, Keystone Cops, wetting the bed, whatever the phrase you want to use is that, I mean, and all those players know how much they cock that up. They don't need us to tell us that.
No.
Then for so many people to round that on, and as you say, AD, it's just that one kick, the difference between a win that we deserved and a draw that is
Yeah.
irritating for people to be that fickle that everything changes. And as Andy said earlier, we, for the most part, played well. I didn't think
Yeah.
much of Everton at all.
Yeah, no, Andy, it wasn't a terrible performance at all. It's just the finishing that was lacking again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like the first half, we probably should have been like a couple of goals up. I thought we started the game well. We put them under pressure, got some quality balls into the box. Welbeck had a couple of opportunities that he wasn't able to convert.
Frankly, I think he should have done a lot better with those first half chances.
Yeah,
Yeah, the header in
Mittema.
particular. I mean, you were just waiting for the net to bulge, weren't you?
Certainly the second header, I thought he should have done better with that. The first one was a little bit trickier. The Mittema chance as well, although having looked at it again, I'm not entirely sure how much control he really had of the ball. He did quite well to get that shot off, but again, it's a good opportunity for him to
You
put
know,
it in the net.
the football involved in it, the 1-2 with Danny Welbeck was just delicious.
Oh, it's
Well, this
fantastic.
is the point, and it's something that you've often talked about, AD, is us trying to get past the team with a low block. Now, I wouldn't say Everton, I hate the phrase low block, but we know what we mean. It's deep defending. And the point is that we did manage to get through that quote low block this time. The fact we couldn't finish is, you know, well, it'll come. But, you know, previously you've said, oh, we can't get through them. We did. And we did it actually time and time again in the first part of the first half. And like you say, it could have been two or three up after 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, Pascal had a chance as well, which he probably should have done better as well. But I mean, it was deflected wide, so.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it was a decent performance. Oddly enough, come the second half, I thought we actually started a bit sluggishly, and I ironically thought that the goal came a little bit against the run of play.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the goal then, because I mean, it was obviously the first goal back for Pascal. He's chasing down that. He's chasing down Danny Welbeck, Andy.
Yes. Yes, he is.
He's
That's what he's
after that
back.
record. He wants it back.
He wants
Well, he
his
never had
record
the
back.
record, but
So,
well, to be fair, if Welbeck carries on finishing the way he has been, then Gross will get that record back.
yeah, but I mean the goal itself, it was all to do. It was that wonderfully punched ball from Van Hecke that found Ayari, whose ball was brilliantly dummied by Babis for Pascal to slide home.
Yeah, just exquisite. Really good stuff. And like, again, that shows that, shows the quality that we've got. I mean, they completely bamboozled the Everton defence. The dummy by Babis is superb. I think his maturation is accelerating probably quite a bit quicker than the team are expecting. Because I think he makes something happen every time he comes on. Sadly against Fulham, it was a negative, but he
Well,
does. But he does, but he makes stuff happen, and he's really
intelligent.
alert. Yeah, he's really alert. He's really alert.
Okay, let me throw this one at you, because we've had 18-year-old strikers before, and we worried about, are we worrying, should we concern ourselves about a false dawn? And I'm thinking of Connolly a few years ago. Ferguson started well and then sort of fell off a bit. Is this a kind of a new enthusiasm, or do you genuinely see things where we thought we saw with Ferguson, we thought we saw with Connolly, that Babis has?
Right. Well, if he came from Athlone rather than Athens, then that'd be a different story.
I think no, I think there's something a bit more solid here with Babis because of his pedigree and his previous experience before we bought him. I think Connolly and Ferguson basically came through the youth ranks here, whereas Babis has had more experience, albeit in Greek football, at various age levels, but including like adult football as well, and incredibly highly thought of in Greece as a very exciting prospect. So I think we got him when he was further along in his progress than Aaron and Fergie. I think they were starting from lower down the hill than he was.
Do you think
That
he's ready
is.
enough? Do you think he's ready enough to be a regular starter?
Personally, I think it wouldn't be outrageous for him to start a game every now and then. It's if he needed to give Welbeck a rest and think, well, maybe I'll just give Welbeck half an hour or give Babis the hour or whatever. I mean, I've seen nothing to suggest that that
No.
would not
Well,
work out.
he started that game against Burnley, and he did have the ball in the net after like 10 minutes. So, and it was just marginally offside that
Yeah.
one, but it was
But was
it's actually a
it?
lot more
But
marginal than we actually
was
thought. But it was
it?
but he led the line really well. He was strong. He was mobile. I have got no issues with him starting games whatsoever. And in fact, I'd probably quite like to see him start alongside Danny actually.
Yeah, that would be. I would definitely be in favour of that. It would.
Because then they can rotate leading the line, can't they?
Yeah.
No, the point about that is that obviously under Hertzler and just modern football anyway, so the whole notion of, oh, he's a right back, or he's a left back, or he's this, he's that, doesn't seem to really sort of warrant that. So every striker has to perform their defensive duties. Now, Welbeck isn't too shabby as a defender. I think that Kostoulis has still got to have that about his game. He's a little bit careless getting the ball back sometimes. He's got to be a bit cuter about trying to win the ball. And he could do a lot worse than learning the odd trick or two from Carlos Baleba, who, incidentally, and I'd like to discuss him, is he back?
Looks like it.
Yeah, looks like it. Although he did give away one very good chance for Everton in the second
Yeah,
half,
it,
an
his
absolute
perform.
hospital ball,
Yeah, his
but
performance at Everton was better than the one against. Sorry, his performance at Fulham was better than the one against Everton. I thought. he was a little bit lackluster here and there, but by and large, that the driving Carlos was back,
Way
the one
better
that
than
wants to
earlier
pick up the
this.
ball and drive.
Way better than earlier this season, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that confidence to pick up that ball and do that run forward that no one can touch him on. You know, that guy is there. And you know, and I'm delighted to see him back because it can only mean good things for the Albion going forwards. But
Damn it, we need that fella back.
we need the other players to be as good as Carlos.
But does it actually therefore not beg the point that since he has returned, and you've mentioned the nature of our performances against Fulham and against Everton and others since the turn of, well, certainly since mid-January, that our performances have improved? And it's no mistake, obviously, one, Pascal Gross is back, but two, Belieber's performance have
Yeah.
improved as well. That's no coincidence, is it?
Yes. And can I just point out that actually Pascal didn't take the corners on Saturday and they were much better. So
Yeah, they were
just
pretty good,
just
actually.
just the note to Pascal there. You know, get on the end of them, Pascal. Come on, you can do it.
I love the fact that you want to tell Pascal Gross how to take a dead ball.
Oh no, if anything in and around the box, he can have it. But just keep it away from Lewis. That's the main thing. But
Because it'll go over the bar. I mean,
okay,
this is,
well,
sorry, can I, in that case, let me ask this question of you, Andy. Have we actually got two, can we, can, have we got two worse headers of the ball than Van Heck and Dunk in the penalty area, in the opposition penalty area at corners?
oof, good question.
I mean, have they got
It's
50
very
PX?
it's really frustrating that they don't get on that they don't get on the end of them. It is very frustrating. We should be doing better. I think De Kuyper's really good at the set pieces. He's
Yeah, and free kicks as well.
Can I also just point out that, and we'll get on to sort of daft officiating. I think it's just one of those things that has passed a lot of people by. There was one of our corners. Pickford came out for it. He came charging out, clattered about three Everton defenders, and the referee gave a free kick. I mean, obviously, it's obviously a moment that's possibly passed you two by, but
Yeah,
I
I can't
think it.
remember that particular one, but I think I've seen, you know, but I mean, there's been some weird officiating recently, and I think I've been slightly disappointed because, like, this year, like this season, I think the on the field officiating has actually been an improvement on recent seasons. I found myself hurling abuse at the referee a lot less.
And my
This
ears are thankful for it, Andy.
this 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 season, you know, I think, I can't remember who ref the Bournemouth game, but I mean, I was frustrated with the fact that he was stopping the game for cramp
Oh, that
and
was
stuff like
pitiful,
that.
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everton did it to an extent, but not as anything like as bad. I mean, Bournemouth really did set the mark on that one.
No. I mean, that first half was actually quite free flowing. I mean, the sort of defenses were canceling each other out a little bit, but the ball was moving between the 18 yard boxes fairly swiftly in both directions. I don't know where he got 6 minutes added
Well, there was a
for the
stoppage,
second.
wasn't there?
There was a stoppage for, was it Ayari went down, didn't he? But
He
that
got
was about
quite a
two.
clattering, didn't
But it was about 2 minutes. It wasn't.
he? Oh, I
That was
think,
about
and
two.
then you add the substitutions onto it. But yeah, I mean, there is a lot of people chuntering about bringing
Chuntering.
Milner on.
Well, the 6 minutes is one thing, but I think because people were looking at the clock on the scoreboard and it went, it didn't stop it at 96. People were saying, why? Well, because we made a substitution. So you add that on, and I don't think people necessarily realize that. So it's not as
No,
though
they
it was.
did. No, this is what we're saying. People did realize that, and all of a
Yeah.
sudden,
Yeah, I
it's
know,
our
but
fault for making a substitution.
it wasn't Fergie time. It wasn't the Man United issue here. So
No, he was at Roma, but
very funny. But no, my point here is that the referees, and in fact, I was fully expecting him to blow the whistle as soon as we kicked off again. And even then, he still gave us another 20 seconds, which, and this is where Babis can be a little bit clumsy. The ball gets pumped forward. And instead of going for the ball, he just decided to take out his man. It'll come. He's 18. When he's on the ball, he's very exciting. When he's off the ball trying to get it, he's a little bit
His second touch can be a tackle at times.
Yeah, he's like a bulldog with rail jacks up his
And
backside.
that was the issue at Fulham, where he conceded the free kick, which he really didn't need to concede because there was cover. He didn't need to make up
Exactly.
for his mistake. But
Exactly.
okay, we're talking about mistakes. We had the ball in the net to make it 2-0, Al.
I'm going to swear, so I'm going to hand it over to Andy.
Well, I don't know. It's bad enough not knowing what the handball rule is at the moment, but
Yeah.
now the offside rule is open to various bits of interpretation. And we had in this game we had the same rule applied in different fashion. I certainly don't think Veltman was offside. I think.
If anything, he was being fouled.
Well, I was screaming for a penalty before Mittimer
It's true, he
actually,
was.
which before Mittimer hit the ball into the net, because for me, I've not seen it in great detail, so I stand to be corrected. But it looked to me like Veltman got fouled, but I think
Was
others
being
have.
pushed backwards, and him being pushed backwards led to him being judged to be offside, which is why they disallowed the goal.
It's just ridiculous. And I had a friend in the stadium who had a seat by the monitors. He could see. He just said, "No, that's completely wrong."
I mean, the flag did go up straight away, to be fair.
In fairness to the lino, he put the flag up, and I actually don't have a problem with him doing that.
Yeah.
I think, I think if lino should do that, but surely upon review, you could see that it was a goal, but
Yeah, and like I said, this then begs the point of what was it now? Three in a row, isn't it? Where you got, admittedly, this is kind of not overturning the on-field decision. This is going with the on-field decision. I mean, the point is, if the flag hadn't gone up, would it have been disallowed? I mean, that's another argument entirely. So it's gone
probably
with the
not.
on-field
That's the
decision.
thing, they're told not to put the flags up as well, which I mean it's a weird thing, and I don't necessarily agree with, but that is what they're told to do, and then they'll
I
make
think with
a.
a situation where they're standing still, like at a set piece, you get a clearer idea of the offside. It's when they're running that it's actually not necessarily always that easy, especially if it's something like running into a half that's largely empty and the other defender that is keeping you onside or might be keeping you onside is on the other side of the pitch. That bit I kind of get. And you go with something a bit later. The really infuriating thing about that is then, like I said, the game then goes forward about 30, 40 yards. Then the flag goes up. And for some reason, they then insist that the free kick's taken from there rather than where the original offside bit occurred. That's another thing entirely. I mean, I still stand by the notion that VAR has a place. It has merit. But it also is the case that it is actually being run by lobotomized donkeys.
This is very, very true, and it is just frustrating because I mean with our side, you're not taking into account the frame rate, you're not when's the ball being played. It's like they're just drawing the line at random moments, which it's I mean the classic one, the Danny's one at Fulham was just ridiculous.
Well, it was just plain wrong. That's the point. I mean, so we've got the Bournemouth one where the referee booked the player and he was right in the first instance. They've got the one at West Ham where, again, referee didn't call it, called over to the monitor, only looked at a freeze frame, which doesn't add context and doesn't actually point out that the ball did hit Dunk on the chest first, then hit his arm. So VAR is making a point. You know, this thing about. You want consistency across referees. Now, you can understand you want consistency from a referee within a game. You can understand it when a different referee in a different game has a different viewpoint because the rule does say it's in the opinion of the referee. I get that. But I've also got to be careful what I wish for because, on account of the fact of, yes, I do, we are getting consistency. We're getting a consistently crap VAR that's ruining it for us.
Are you suggesting that Everton's equaliser should have been disallowed, Al?
Yes, absolutely suggesting that.
Wow, whoa, what a joy. Would you like to give us your reasons why the officials got this one wrong, Al?
Well,
Yeah, go on. Yeah, all right, go on, Andy, because I'll only swear again, but go on.
the shot comes in from just outside the box. Tarkowski gets out of the way of the ball in front of
You can see him. You can see
Verbruggen,
him,
in
which is
front of
interfering with
Verbruggen, who
play.
then in front of Verbruggen, who says that. And he's not just off.
Oh,
I
he's a
mean,
long way off.
it was about 3 yards. This was not a marginal decision.
And he himself thought he was going to get called on it. Now, when a player feels that they themselves are going to get called on it, wow.
And yet he was deemed to not have been interfering with play. But like the ball's being shot in. He's standing in the way of it. He gets out of the way of it in front of the goalie, and they're saying, "Oh, it's not in his line of sight." Verbruggen is going to see Tarkowski there.
Yeah, he's
It's
right there.
it's literally like a
It's
couple of
possibly
yards. He's
affected
going to see him there,
how he's
and
moved,
like
and
that will affect the micro judgment. It will affect when he gets down to the ball, where he palms it out,
he
and
could have held
whatnot.
on to the ball. He might have held on to it if he wasn't in his line of sight.
Yeah,
Any number of things.
so you cannot say that with 100% certainty that he was not interfering with play. What you can say is that he was standing in an advanced position ahead of the last defender and in front of the goalkeeper. That is offside.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, being in an offside position and being offside aren't necessarily one of the same. But in this instance, because the ball passed so close to him and was in the line of sight of Verbruggen, what?
He actually moved out of the way of the ball. So he was part of that play. He was
Yes.
part he was a participant in that phase of play.
So I'd be
So
curious as to what PG Moll said in allowing the goal. I mean, I suppose if, again, it's gone with the on-field decision, no offside flag was raised.
if you disallow ours, you've got to disallow that one. I mean, I would understand, I would accept that our one was offside if the rule was applied in the same fashion across the two incidents, and they say, well, they were consistent, they just said like he was offside, sorry lads, it's not a goal, that's fine. But to interpret the same law in a completely different way is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, right? Football, one of the reasons we go, football's all about joy. It's about
No, it
the
isn't.
joy of the scoring a
I
goal.
hate
Those
it.
moments that like make you smile, that give you like a massive buzz, and it makes you weak, and you're talking about it for months, years, decades afterwards. It's when it comes along and they just steal this joy away from you. It's just so frustrating.
I can understand officials on the field getting marginal decisions in,
A human.
incorrect,
A human, mate.
because they're human, the game's going at a fast pace or whatever, and like I get that, they're not superhuman. I mean, especially when it comes down to like say like the Danny Welbeck against
Yeah.
Fulham thing, they're not gonna know that one bit of fabric was marginally over some imaginary line. They're just going to call it how they see it, and that's fine. And like referees and officials are human, I can accept that. What I can't accept is that when you've actually got access to slow down footage, that you then compound the error.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable to me. And like, if you're still going to have it, if you're still going to make those errors, get rid of it.
Well, this is it. I mean, the notion of offside, is it supposed to be a factual thing? I mean, like
Yeah.
goal line technology, it's supposed to be a factual thing as opposed to, say, a penalty, which is still open to interpretation. Now, for instance, the penalty against Bournemouth, referee thought it was a dive. VAR said, no, you need to have another look at it. And you think, well, that's when you're not becoming an assistant referee anymore, because at the end of the day, it was still a dive. You are now becoming an additional referee, and that's not what you're there for.
They're not
So
there to re-referee the game.
it's the referee is the fella in the middle. It's got to be an absolute howler. And even if there might have been, well, there was contact, and we're back to the Richard Keys twaddle now. Even if there was contact, okay, does not follow that Verbruggen upended the Bournemouth striker. That wasn't the case at all. He fell under his own volition. He was on his way down before Verbruggen, etc., etc. Now, surely what we're talking about therefore is, what is the purpose of VAR if a referee who, just because they disagree, with a ref with the on-field referee needs to have to stick their nose in. It's when it's things like, and we're back to the Thierry Henry thing against Ireland. That's the clear and obvious one. Not the one that is still open. I mean, I'm even thinking Danny Welbeck's disallowed goal at Spurs. I'm still not convinced it hit his hand on the way in. It's got to be clear and obvious. And they're not doing it. They're actually just sticking their nose in to say, well, this might have crossed the threshold. You go with the on-field decision. You have to.
Umpire's
Otherwise, you've
call.
now got two referees, and that's not what they're there for.
Yeah. I'm just
Yeah,
bringing umpire's
completely.
call. It's what it should be.
Well, this is it. What worries me, and I said this on a recent show, was then when the referee gets called over to the monitor, and I think there was the incident with City against Wolves a couple of weeks ago. Referee gets called over to the monitor and says, no, I'm going with my on-field decision. But there's this thing of almost like, do not embarrass the VAR, do not upset your fellow referee, because it's a very visual and very obvious and very overt thing that when a referee gets called over to the monitor, VAR is sure that it's the referee's got something wrong. And so when the ref says, you know, he's going there and he's saying to them, I don't want to embarrass you because I think I got it right in the first place. They almost like they
So have
stick
the courage
together.
of your convictions,
Yeah,
basically.
it's like this hive mind that wants VAR. It's almost like VAR is Big Brother and must be adhered to and must be
Well,
obeyed. And
we
that's
all know they don't get it right all the time. And there
I'm
was that
not.
one, I can't remember, I think, was it the Palace game a couple of weeks ago where the ref went to the VAR and he came, oh yeah, it was accidental, therefore I'm giving the penalty. I'm like, what?
Yeah. No, I mean,
What?
well, the thing is, it's the one you mentioned the other day, AD, which I think I'm going to put a bit more meat onto the bone. It's the Fulham offside against, sorry, the Liverpool offside against Fulham. And VAR then said, well, so and so was onside because of the 5 centimetre
Ruling, yeah.
rule. And we're going, what 5 centimetre rule is that? I mean, if there's one, no one's ever heard of it, and two, it's never been used, or if it has, we don't get to know about it. You know, let's put it this way, the graphic doesn't come up with a kind of a
Yeah.
five nominal 5 centimetre thick sort of line there. There's an absolute line and not at all. So you think,
Yeah.
okay, so Liverpool have been given 5 centimetres grace here, which is possibly the difference between offside and not offside.
As was Semenyo.
Exactly. It's okay. So we've now got a different VAR set of offside rules for Liverpool, because the rest of us, and if the 5 centimetre rule is being used, why don't the people in the stadium, who incidentally were supposed to be kept informed of what's going on, know about it?
Well, like I've said it before, and I'll say it again, the officials the year before VAR came in got 94% of the decisions right. So I'd take those odds.
One
Yeah.
wonders what these stats are now, then, in that case.
Well,
This is.
I tell you where I will go.
Where were you going to go?
To Radio Reverb 97.2 FM online at radioreverb.com on DAB and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited. And ow, it's the month of love.
No, in this universe, it ain't, mate.
Yeah,
Listen, I've loved the Albion since, you know, I won't say before I can remember. I know what it was since I was six, but sometimes that is an unrequited love. They don't love you back all the time, and nor does football generally, but, you know, it's. But we persevere. So if you really feel like persevering, then get your loved one some flowers or some chocolates or champagne, in which case head to Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. They are lovely people. They will do so many different things that you ask of them. And more to the point, if you're an Albion season ticket holder, you can get a 20% discount. Now, what I did was I bought my wife some flowers the other day and did the thing of, right, okay, this is the figure that they're going to set me. Right, because I'm getting a 20% discount, raise the price and then bring it back to what the discounted price is. So it's if you see what I mean there. So yes, my wife got an even lovelier bunch of flowers, courtesy of the generous 20% discount that Flowers Unlimited will offer all Albion season ticket holders. Just one thing though, make sure you tell them or you're not going to get your discount. So go to what Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And thanks very much indeed to Dave Costa for sponsoring the Raw.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Well, no, it's not the video assistant, Raw, by the way, just in case people were wondering. But it's
no, you're not watching us here. We're
okay. Well, I mean, the January window is now officially closed, and it was a bit of a weird one, and there's been a lot of questioning the club's ambition here. Now, I'm not necessarily going along those lines, but is letting players go out on loan to boost their own personal World Cup hopes not showing a lack of ambition for ourselves?
Okay, I'm going to take this one.
Go on, then.
I think all the outgoings kind of make sense, except maybe Gruder, because he's been quite involved in the squad, but there's speculation that he thinks it's maybe not been enough, but for whatever reason that is, he's gone. I think Watson is clearly not ready for the Premier League yet. So him going to a competitive Championship club makes great sense for him. For Coppola, I mean, sadly for Coppola, I mean, Coppola and Bascagli can both play. They're both oven-ready first-team players for us at the moment. But sadly for Coppola, you know, Dunk, who we'd all put on the scrap heap in the summer, has done a Pascal Gross on us and sent us down to the Humble Pie Cafe, where we've been tucking in for several months now, because Lewis has been absolutely superb, and obviously Van Hecke has been his usual excellent self. So very difficult for him to go in. I think Coppola and Bascagli, both a big part of our defensive futures. Certainly, I think there'll be changes in the summer. And keeping a player like that happy and also in nick makes a lot of sense. So I can see it. Bringing Igor back, obviously, I don't think he's as good as Coppola, but it's just a body. You got Bascagli as the next in line. He's more than good enough. Igor as the emergency cover. I don't think that's a problem. I think with Gruder going, it kind of opens the door for Harry Howe to maybe make a little bit more progress with some cameos this season, as Hertzler has a slightly more streamlined squad where he might be able to get a more consistent lineup, especially as we've got Minter coming back now. And I think if, you know, with Minter coming back and possibly Solly being able to contribute.
I've got that here. We've seen the images the club have put out this week of training ahead of the game this weekend, and Solly is very much involved in all of those. So perhaps he is actually a lot closer to a return than we actually think he is, and that's one of the reasons why we have actually been let Tommy Watson go.
I think you're right. I think the club know the players, they're not going to deliberately leave themselves short. And considering like the role that has been left vacant is like winger that comes on in the last 15 minutes because we want to try something or give someone some experience. So, you know, particularly like, you know, if we're going to be starting Minter and Matoma, please can we start Minter and Matoma? They're like, it was so frustrating on Saturday when they were both separated by the bench.
They were both on the pitch for quite a while.
Yeah, they were. They were eventually, but I'd like to see it from the beginning.
Wasn't that when we scored, though? When they were both on the pitch?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Yeah. No, also, I think that the point,
what happens when you have them both on the pitch at the same time?
But yeah, the point you've made there, I don't know if it was an inadvertent point, but the point you're making here is, you know, it gives Harry Howell a chance. It says to me that Howell is ahead of Watson in the pecking order. because Howell doesn't seem to be going out on loan anywhere anytime soon. And he's been okay. I think Watson, there is something there. I think he's possibly been signed a season too soon. Would he have gone on loan if Sunderland had, you know, had kept him? It's worth contemplating. We don't know. I mean, let's face it. All of us, and I'm looking at someone like Kostoulas here, who's an 18-year-old. He's kind of bulky already. You have to be physically strong. And when I've seen Tommy Watson play, he's not physically strong. He's talented. He's got a decent cross. He knows how to run. I think he also needs to up his game defensively. But like I say, when it's a one-on-one and the ball's there to be, or a 50-50 or something like that, he'll invariably come out second best.
Mm.
And as for Gruder, as I said on our WhatsApp group this week.
Oh, I love this.
He plays
absolutely love this.
He plays like a supermarket trolley with a broken wheel. he is all over the show. And there's been too many games where if there's a decision that he's going to make, it's invariably the wrong one. And I'm looking and see also Jorginho Rutter at the moment. But you know full well that the pair of them have something to give. But I think, as you said, Andy, I think he had a bit of a gripe at the beginning of the season or the end of last season about himself not getting enough game time. Maybe that's played on Hertzler's mind. We don't know. I've got to admit it's an unusual one, but also if he's not going to necessarily start and he's, I don't know, is it a case of he's not doing as he's told? Is it a case that, you know, the falling over theatrically is also getting on your dick?
So maybe I was going to mention that. Because his problems with gravity. I mean, if we're going to criticise Bournemouth for their goon tower antics at the game a couple of weeks ago, we've got to be do exactly the same with Gruder, and it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. I hate his lack of gravity,
Andy. Well, I mean, I think every set of fans, what you know, certainly in this country, likes to think their club doesn't do it, but. The whole notion of a player going down a bit too easy, it makes you wince as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And yeah, I've got to admit, I'm probably a much bigger fan of Brian Gruder than either of your kids.
Oh, he's got plenty about
it. But he does do it. He does go over too easy when it's played. So I think a lot of the time he goes over legitimately, but there are occasions where it's like, dude, stay on your feet, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, and AD's right, it is embarrassing. You can't call out other teams for it if we're going to give a free pass to our players.
It's also,
I don't want to see our players doing it. A, because, like, ref never buys it. I mean, Bournemouth and Villa and Fulham are much better at conning the referee out of the kick than we are, because Gruder goes down and, like,
I know referees
saying you are having a giraffe, mate, as he's walking, running past him on the ground.
But I know referees aren't supposed to do this or prejudge or whatever, but they do. And like it becomes the boy who cries wolf if you keep doing it.
Absolutely.
I think you're right.
Therein lies the exact point is that now he's got a reputation for doing so. If he gets two footed straight into the face, it's going to be play on, you know, nothing wrong there.
But, you know, I mean, Leipzig were in for him when he came here anyway. So that's a good opportunity for him to go and play at a good level. But Coppola, I'm not so sure about that one. I mean, there was talk of him going to Milan, but he's gone to Paris FC.
Well, he hasn't gone far then, has he?
Well, we are Brighton Hove Albion. We're practically French.
We are.
But it's, it's an interesting move. He will be playing. I don't actually know how good Paris FC are. I know they got promoted last year. They've got a brand new stadium next to the Parc des Princes.
Yep.
Well, let's have a look.
Well, they are literally over the road. If you want to, you know, the whole thing of Dundee and Dundee United being in the same street. They actually back onto each other. And there's a narrow street in between.
They are currently in 14th. After 20 games, they're on 21 points. So they are 8 points clear of relegation.
Maybe with Coppola being there, who knows how they're going to get on. Obviously, Paris FC need a...
They have actually beaten PSG this season. So,
I mean, if you want local derby...
That would have been feisty.
You could easily have it where a ball is cleared from one stadium to the other.
But whilst we're talking about France, I just want to give a quick mention to Simon Adingra, who didn't it he's had a bit of a rubbish time of it at Sunderland. He'd had a bit of a rubbish time with us last year, but he's made the move to Monaco, where he'll be reunited with Ansu Fati, and you know we'll always have that night in Amsterdam of those two combining. That was a night scoring both of those goals, and you know I know he got a bit of a raw press last year. Well, not raw press from us, but I should point out. But you know, I've got a lot of love for the guy, and I wish him all the best.
Yeah, good luck to him.
I love the how he re another one who returned from an international tournament and given a hero's welcome upon that. You know, we're looking back at how Alexis Mac Allister did when he won the World Cup, but when Adingra came back with the AFCON trophy or an AFCON medal,
Yeah.
you know, again, hero. And one, that's what this club does. And two, for a player, incidentally, who, if you did see him at that tournament, you could see was absolutely brilliant.
And he was for us. It's just like last season, he wasn't given enough very many opportunities, and like I think his confidence went, and I think it's not quite come back. So good luck to him. But one player we were perhaps surprised to see leave was Joe Knight. Now he's not a player we've seen an awful lot of, but he did make his Premier League debut for us this year. Obviously, a very brief cameo when he came on with Oriola against Leeds, wasn't it? But he's gone permanently to, as you like to call him, St. Evenage, to Stevenage. So that was a bit of a surprise. He's normally a player that, if he's going to get opportunities and actually get on the pitch in the Premier League, you'd think, well, he might be one that we.
Centre back, yeah.
He's a
Centre back.
midfielder, I think, isn't he?
Is
I
he?
don't. I
I'm just
honestly
wondering about
don't
the
know,
amount
but
of traffic that's ahead of him. But I mean, it's
yeah, it's
one thing.
basically he's stuck in traffic, with
Yeah.
and
But
also the fact he's gone to Stevenage, I think, shows the level of the club's sort of, and it, let's face it, is it rarely gets it wrong. It shows the level of a given player's standing. I
that's
mean, he
a good place to start your professional career. I think with all of these
absolutely.
younger lads that have been definite prospects for us for our sort of, under 21s, and but at least now they're not on loan anymore. They're getting permanent contracts. They are now professional footballers at clubs that they belong to, and they can now start to forge their careers. And like, you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and can anyone tell me who the manager of Stevenage is?
It's not the fellow that used to do Lewis, was it?
No. Steve Evans. No, he's at Bristol Rovers now.
All
It's not
right.
Alex.
Who?
It's not Alex Ravel still, is
It's
it?
Alex
It's
Ravel.
Alex Ravel. Okay, he's gone back
Good
as manager.
grief!
Brilliant.
Him
Yeah.
of the hat trick against Bournemouth. He was very delighted to remind Dean Wilkinson
Yes,
about
he
it.
screamed
What
blue
a
murder at him, didn't he?
what a moment of joy that was.
Yeah, and Dean Wilkinson. Well, I don't mind that, provided they score a hat trick. No, hang on. You're one of your
Yeah.
players has just verbally abused you in front of 4,000 fans. Yeah, that was kind of amusing. But you
Good
mentioned,
on
I think, also
Alex.
at the top of the show, Ada, you mentioned Calum Vickers.
Yeah,
He's out on loan.
he's gone to Wigan, is
Right,
it?
he's someone I've got high hopes for.
Yeah, Wigan.
Yeah, he's someone I've got high hopes for. When every time I've seen the under 21s play, now obviously there's a world of difference between the under 21s and even just senior football. I mean, I say a world of difference when the level that the first team is at. Now the under 21s does actually perform very well against third and fourth division sides. Does come unstuck once or twice, but it does compete on a relatively level playing field. But then the first team isn't at that level anymore. We're up in the sort of mid Premier League, and there is a world of difference there. So there's a lot of players that you can see, even those from a couple of years ago when we were I think second in the PL2. There are a lot of players. I mean, admittedly, we're also talking about the likes of Moises Caicedo and Jack Hinchinbrook were playing for them as well at the same time. But and we're talking also Andy Moran and.
Yeah, so he's finally gone permanently to PNE, so to Preston North End.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I mean, he was never really going to get much of an opportunity. I mean, we see a lot of players of that ilk who've the perennial
Oh,
loanees,
yeah.
but
I
okay,
mean, it's.
well, let's talk about the player that's come back. And I thought it's a player who I thought was going to be a perennial quiz question, actually, as to who scored our first goal of the season this year. And he's back. It's Matt O'Riley. He's gone and hung out with Roberto De Zerbi for a little bit, and now he's back.
Now, what is has anyone got the inside track as to what Marseille want with why they didn't want him?
I think because they didn't, once they hadn't qualified for the next stage of the Champions League, kind of didn't
It's, I
need
think
him.
it's a money thing more than anything.
Yeah. So obviously the Champions League tap had been turned off. So deemed surplus to requirements. Yeah, I can't say I'm overly thrilled at the return of Matt O'Riley, but I'm not particularly upset by it. It certainly mitigates the Gruyter going away. So Gruyter out, O'Riley back in.
Yeah, it's
In
just
terms of like their overall contribution to the team, it's probably about a like for like swap,
yeah.
I
I mean,
think.
it's just a weird one. I mean, I he started the first two games of the season, and he's playing it in his preferred role as well. And I don't, I just think. I mean, he's a player I really like. Let me stick my neck on the line here and say he's a player I actually really like, and I think there's a lot to come from him. I like his movement. I loved the goal he scored against Man City last season, which was just brilliant, and give us the win against them. And you know, that's the player, the box to box player, which I think we could possibly, if we can get that out of him, that performances out of him, that would be sensational. But there is the question mark. There were a lot of rumours, and there's no smoke without fire. But I can't
Oh,
corroborate them
don't
because I
use
don't
that
know. They are
phrase.
just that. They are just rumours. But the fact that he was bombed out so quickly, after starting the first two games, did seem to be a little bit weird, and it did suggest that something might have been going on behind the scenes. But
Well,
let's just
it's,
hope
I was
that
about to say it's not worth speculating over
no, it's
because.
not. We're not going to speculate on it. But it's like he's a player that I really appreciate. I think he is a great player, and he's got that potential. And I hopefully we can get that player out of them, the player that like scored a lot of goals for Celtic.
Well, he's got another opportunity now, and this is an opportunity. So he can he take it?
Yeah.
Ball is in your court, Matt.
Scoring the winner against Palace will always be good, though, wouldn't it? That would be that
That
will set him up. That'll set him up for
would
life.
advance anybody's cause. I'm looking forward to finding out who scores the winner, well, the goals that contribute to our win on Sunday.
Well, as it stands, the head-to-head with our friends from Snake Mountain are we are currently ahead. So
We have been
we
for
are on
years.
41 wins to their 39 with 32 draws.
Their double over us last season was the first since the 1930s. I mean,
Yeah.
it's bizarre, actually. I mean, for the so many different seasons we've played against them, there's only been five doubles. So we've doubled them three times. They've doubled us twice. That's kind of bizarre, and I think that's probably borne out in the let's say your head-to-head of 41-39. It's so close, you know. For years, for decades, we had parallel histories, and then they sort of snuck ahead of us. They got to the top division in 1969. We didn't do so till 79, and obviously then we had our terrible times, and they were in the top division, sort of stinking the place out. But you know, all that sort of stuff goes out the window when it's a rivalry. So I say on Sunday, anything can happen and probably invariably will.
Yeah, I think we all know what happens next, don't we? And the fact they just spent 48 million as well, Jesus. But we'll have to find that out next week because that is all we have time for this week. So thank you so much, as ever, to Alan Wares. Thank you to Andy Bass. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. Bye.